All right, welcome. It is Wednesday night, so we're back for another episode.
Another week.
Another week.
Episode in the cloud? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. At some point, we have to have like a really fancy sounding intro, but I never think of it until we actually get here, and then I'm like, I don't really know what to say, and we just do the same little weird start every week. It's our thing now.
Weather.
It's our thing now, yeah. So I just mentioned to you in passing as we were starting, you know, streaming gods hopefully are on our side, and you know, made a bunch of changes to the Mac. I got shamed a little bit by Claude after last week because I was like, well, it still didn't work. We got these pauses, and it's like, did you do your checklist? And I'm like, I don't like the fact that you remember stuff now. And I was like, well, no. And it said something along the lines, I'm paraphrasing, but it said something like, well, then that's why it didn't work. And I'm like, oh, you cheeky little bastard. So I made sure this today. I was like, okay, give me the checklist. And I went through and I very meticulously went through each thing. So this way, if something does go wrong in the stream, I can say I did follow the checklist, and we'll go from there. But the one interesting thing, you know, I keep finding different ways to use these tools. And last week, my Mac kept complaining about space, and I'm using the little storage tool, right? And it's like, you've got 100 gig free. So I'm like, why? Okay. Why is it complaining about space? So I ask Claude, I break down and I'm like, okay, you got to help me solve this. And it's like, oh, well, it looks like, again, kind of paraphrasing a little bit, but there was like an OS update or something. And it's like, okay, I'm just speculating, but you probably ran out of space when it was trying to update. And those don't actually necessarily show in the storage. Now, I don't know if it's just BS or not, but I was like, okay, let's go figure this out. I cleaned up 200 gigs of space with Claude's help.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that checks out to me. Like, that's cromulent. I've run into issues with Mac updates before that haven't finished properly. So,
yeah.
Well, so where did you find like all that extra space?
Well, all sorts of old archived projects, like internal stuff, customer stuff, just things we weren't working on anymore. So it helped me get all that into Google, right? Into Google, whatever they call it, Google Workspace, right? So that freed up a fair amount. The software that I use to edit this after the fact, it's called Descript, probably talked about it before. It had almost 100 gigs. Yeah. Of local projects. And it's like, you don't need any of this. We can back it up. So I got a little external drive. So I backed everything up to the drive and then just was like, okay, clean it up. And so it was Descript by far was the biggest offender. And then I had old Steam games installed that I don't, right? You just forget about them.
Classic.
Minecraft was almost 6 gigs.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not too bad actually, considering.
Clean that up because I don't use the Mac for that anymore. So we have lots of disk space tonight. If we run out of disk space, we've been talking for too long.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. So made some good progress.
Nice. I just goes to show you, like, no wonder people in the film industry or editors or video producers need such huge capable machines, right?
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah. Yeah. And I the one thing I changed also was I turned off, we were doing like the multi-camera records and all that because I said to you, I always had this plan to make some splashy stuff. And I just, you know what, I just never do. So I was like, why am I recording all of this different video content? Maybe in the future, if we ever decide to try it again, I'll turn it back on. But for the time being, I might as well just make my workflow a little easier and just get rid of it.
Yeah, fair enough. Like at a certain point, you're just hoarding video files, right?
Yeah. And, you know, you can't get storage anymore. So
you can't.
So it's not like I can say, well, I'll just dump this to an external drive somewhere.
I heard prices are going down, though.
Are they?
Which is nice. Yeah, finally.
Okay.
Because of the, maybe for, I'm thinking specifically of RAM because of that Google compression announcement, right? There was like a market panic.
Yeah.
So hopefully that holds out. But
I also read somewhere, and I can't remember where it was now, that there's some I think it was a Taiwanese company that had signed like some sort of big fancy, you know, document. Doesn't really mean anything, but like to open up a very large memory and storage manufacturing plant in the States somewhere.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. But I don't know. You know, that's probably years away, right? I don't think you just suddenly have storage or memory manufacturing overnight. It's going to take forever. But
yeah, these fabs are so intense to build and maintain and run.
Yeah. All right, man.
Years at least.
Yeah, years, I would say. But if storage prices are coming back down, that's good.
Yeah.
We have a little. I put in my notes a little thing we can tie back to that later.
Ooh,
yes,
that's exciting.
Yeah. All right. So let's jump in with the regular beginning of the program, AWS News. The first one I made note of is some new cost allocations for Bedrock. You can now associate Bedrock usage with IAM users and or roles.
Hmm.
So give you a little more visibility, right?
That's going to be adopted immediately pretty much everywhere, I'm sure that.
Yeah.
And if you use Bedrock at all.
Yeah. So it says here that you can tag principals like with sort of the standard tagging stuff we always hear, right? Maybe a project code, a cost center, something like that. And it's available wherever you can run Bedrock. The one thing I kind of thought about this, though, was like, okay, this is good. This, you know, it's nice to be able to allocate your costs other than just having a big black box of a number, right? Mm-hmm. But I also thought, like, most times when I'm working on projects, you know, we don't share accounts anymore, right? Like, everything is separated by a project, by a department, something. So if I have individual accounts, do I really care about cost allocation by users and roles?
You do if your entire dev team is using a shared service account for Bedrock access on local cloud dev. That's what this is for.
That makes sense, right? So you've got a dev account or something like that where everybody's banging away on it, and now you can see that who spent the money. Yeah, I didn't think of that. I was just thought of, well, if you've got the individual accounts, but yeah, you're going to have some sort of shared account at some point where everybody's
working. And I'm sure you might want to categorize it, like if you're running multiple agents in a specific account for different purposes, like you might have a chatbot agent, like customer support thing, or you might have like a local, you know, wiki agent or something like that. You might want to track, you know, how much usage is being used there.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. I actually worked on my first Bedrock agent project this week.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I learned something really interesting. Remember, we've talked a lot about this idea of, is it called agent core? So we've actually got another thing here that I threw into the notes for tonight about agent core. So I was working away on this and I kind of planning some stuff out and trying to figure out what the hell I wanted to do. And I'm like, wait, I don't actually know. Like, I couldn't articulate what the difference was between Bedrock agents and Bedrock agent core. So I'm like, okay, I got to go and figure out what the hell this is. But in a nutshell, I hope I'm understanding this correctly because I'm too far down the path now to change. But think of Bedrock agents as sort of AWS's managed implementation of agents running on Bedrock, right? So it's like the highly opinionated, this is the way you should do it. So it's kind of like a managed service versus agent core, which you could run any model, any framework, pretty much anything you want on top of the infrastructure that Agent Core provides. Like there's a memory layer, there's a telemetry layer, there's all sorts of stuff. So I also learned about that this week because I was like, wait, I better know what the difference is in these things before I start working. I went down the agent path for what I wanted to do, sort of an orchestrator or a supervisor with a bunch of sub-agents to do some demos. It worked really well. Got it up and running pretty quickly. And it, for the most part, works pretty well. I've had to do a little bit of tuning to make sure. The other thing I noticed was, I forget what they called it, but you essentially create YAML files that go along with your agents. And as I was learning more about it, I'm like, I'd try a prompt or whatever, and it would basically be like, well, I can't answer that. Or it would say like, yeah. It wouldn't say I can't answer it. It would say something along the lines like, well, I'd love to answer that for you, but I need more info. And I'm like,
but I
don't want to give you context. I want you to try to, I want it to figure it out. Right. And again, going back and forth in the documentation, asking Claude to kind of, hey, I found this page, but I'm not quite sure what this means. Help me understand it. Right. Eventually I figured out the analogy that's stuck in my head now is these YAML files are, it's almost like MCPs and the tools. So you've got this agent with its YAML file, and the YAML file is essentially saying, hey, these are the things, these are the tools, the types of queries that you can answer. And once I got my head wrapped around that, I was able to plug in the holes that I had in my little demo. Pretty slick though. Like if you're interested in kind of looking at that idea of a supervisor or an orchestrator with a couple agents, I don't think you can have a lot of sub agents right now. I think it's like 4 or 5 max you can do, but for what I was doing, it was more than enough. And it was pretty easy. Isn't the right word, but I could get a working demo up in like a day. It was working. Claude helped me with it too, right? Going back to our 5 levels of AI kind of thing and trying to keep it in that sort of high, 4 to 5 level. I was able to bang it out in about a day and have a nice little web interface for it and everything. Pretty slick. So if you haven't tried it, it's worth a shot.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm going to poke around with that and play around on the weekend, I think, because that sounds sweet. So you almost get like a little skills YAML you can throw in there.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Oops. I haven't changed the podcast in my calendar, and the echo's yelling at me. Alexa, stop. So that's pretty much it, right? That's a good way to another way to think about it. So worth a little bit of time, I think, just to poke around and see.
Totally.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, especially since we've been messing around with writing our own orchestrators, basically, for this kind of work, right?
Yeah, So it's pretty much, you can do it really quickly. The thing that took the longest, actually, was waiting for the approval to use the Anthropic models. I wanted to use Anthropic again. And you know what? Weren't we talking about this last week? Like some of the...
Yeah.
Amazon, some of the other foundational models that are available on Amazon now. Like I should have not just defaulted to Anthropic again, but I'm so in that mode right now. I was just like,
you're in Claude mode.
Yeah. So I had to sit there and wait for them to approve my use case. And it took a couple hours for that to actually sort of show up. But I've spent a whopping, like, I think about 15 cents at this point. So it's not like it's costing me anything really.
That's not bad. So what's the demo for? Is it specifically for just showing off these agentic little loop systems?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Yeah. Like we've got some demo data, left the demo data in S3. So it's essentially trying to understand the context and creating SQL queries to run against your structured data in S3. And it's using Athena in the middle. So it's pretty slick, actually. Pretty slick.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great use case.
Yeah. Perfect. So that's Bedrock. What were we calling? Cost allocation. Thank you. With a little story to go along with it. The next sort of Bedrock agent related stuff is agent registries and agent core. You can't have an agent solution anymore without your own registry. So this is a private catalog essentially for agents, tools, skills, MCPs, everything that you might have within your organization. You and I work for Acme Widgets. You've got an idea. Mm-hmm. I've got an idea. Rather than us both building it ourselves, you can then put that stuff in the registry and basically say, you've already written something. Why would I write it again? So makes a lot of sense.
If I want to fine tune a model, I can dump the output there, I suppose, or something like that.
I don't know about the models so much. I think it's more like around the tooling that you might have available for people to already use. And the one thing that I thought was really cool, and I wasn't able to answer this before we started, it also has like, I'm going to call it an auto discovery endpoint. So even if you're not quite sure, what you're able to do is sort of somehow register like an an MCP endpoint with this sort of metadata. And even the MCPs can go out and basically run queries to see if some tools or skills or whatever are available for you to use in whatever solutions that you're running. So pretty slick. Yeah.
This is for your orgs stack, your orgs AI stack, basically. So if you have AI internal MCP servers, that kind of thing, this is where you'd put it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Makes a lot of sense for larger orgs, right? Like you don't want a whole bunch of sprawl where everybody's building their own stuff. If you've got, if you've got that centralized repo, why not just use it so you know that it's there and who built it and what it's meant to do and everything. So pretty cool.
Yeah. Totally, because you could easily end up with sprawl if everyone has like access to Replit or something to mess around with their own things, or or dev accounts that are just messing around in, you know. So this makes total sense.
Yeah, right. I thought so. What else is here? I don't think there's really much else to say about that. It's a registry, right?
Yeah.
You shared a link about Amazon BioDiscovery.
Yeah.
Walk us through that one.
This is pretty cool. So this is an announcement from yesterday, the 14th. Essentially, it's one of Amazon's blog posts, Ryan Green and Joanne Kim. But the idea is there is it's an agentic application for lab-in-the-loop drug discovery. So essentially, it's a managed kind of service or that they're setting up in the blog. But the architecture is such that you can connect the compute services in AWS to biology models or protein discovery models, that kind of thing, for drug synthesis.
Yep.
So it's kind of like an extension of what we talked about. Gosh, this was maybe, I guess, going back a year or two ago now, but AlphaFold 2 came out, right? And that's kind of revolutionized the protein discovery process. So taking advantage of that, and how do you build that into a shared resource in AWS that your researchers can hook into, share all their data in, you know, for various experiment and trial runs, and kind of work together instead of being siloed.
Yeah, I thought this was really cool. And you know, it's funny. I'm not saying this stuff isn't going on, but I remember when we first started, there was a lot of news around how these tools could be used for, you know, therapies and genetic maybe we're just not reading the same news sources as we were sort of when we started. But when I saw this, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about how important these tools are for things like medical research and stuff. And the thing that I wrote down here was just the fact, I didn't write down where it came from, but the example was like 100,000 antibody sort of tests or something like that, that they could generate very quickly, like in weeks instead of months, and then test those again. You know, I'm well out of my element here, so I don't know how they how do they take those 100,000 antibodies, right? And then how do they do that testing that they need to do to take it to the next level? But I think just the idea, the scale that you could build out these test cases in such short periods of time. You know, obviously that's there's got to be huge amount of value to that.
Yeah.
Right.
This kind of research in science takes a lot of time just to build out the experiments and actually run them and collect the data. Right. Yeah. So if you can shorten the loop between, okay, we're going to design, you know, X thousand experiments, we're going to run them through our compute models and our machine learning models to kind of pick out what are the most promising runs, and then we'll ship that off to the wet lab, which is what they call essentially where they do the actual physical research in whatever models they're using, right? Like and then run the actual experiments and get the results, and then you can share that across the team and get that it just accelerates the process. I'm still super excited about the potential of like the AlphaFold models and all the innovations in that space, because like that's going to play out over the next 20 years, right?
Yeah.
In terms of like
Well, even like you think about this stuff, and then we were talking about the weather modeling for a long time too.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a lot of that news either lately. I'm sure a lot of stuff's going on, but it's not sort of in the spaces that you and I are reading right now, it seems. But like those are like just, I think, things that you can see real value out of these tools, right? It's great for coders, but this is like great for humanity.
Yeah.
Right? Like
just generally beneficial for everyone systems, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I love the fact that I don't have to write YAML code or as much YAML code as I have to, but in the grand scheme of things, that's pretty low on the value list for humanity, right? Stuff's way better. The other thing that sort of caught me on this and what I was thinking is like this is like AWS playbook over and over, right? They always start with the infrastructure. They give you the primitives, the sort of tools. And then pure speculation on my part, but they get enough customer feedback that says, hey, this is really cool, but I don't want to build all this myself from scratch. So then AWS is like, okay, well, we could build you a platform that has basically we've assembled the infrastructure components that you would need. And here you go, less for you to manage. Just kind of what we were just talking about, agent versus agent core, right? And then, you know, if there's enough uptake on that, then they get to the next layer where they build the applications on top of those platforms. So the other thing that I kind of thought here was just, you know, they're doing that again. They've slowly moved up that stack. And I would think like what this is would be an application that sits on the platform that sits on the infrastructure. And you just don't need to know. And you probably don't necessarily even want to know the underlying pieces because your goal is to generate these tests, right? Let's get them into that wet lab, like you said, as quickly as we can to validate them.
Well, totally. It's like this kind of system, right? It's like, I imagine they probably had like X customers come in. Hey, we're a biotech, biopharma company. We have these laboratories. They generate the data. We need to get this moving through the system faster. And like, I've seen a couple of companies like this, like spec'd out systems, and it's, like the primitives, like you just have to get everything into the same kind of data repository, and then you S3. Have to connect back down to, it's going to be S3.
It's going to be S3.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Right. You got to get everything into S3. Yeah. And then you can generate and run your experiments and data back and forth in and out. Right.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. Really cool. So to move from that to a less interesting or a less important announcement, Amazon's letter to shareholders came out, and some of the numbers they shared are pretty jaw-dropping. And
astounding.
So AWS's AI run rate is $15 billion. Right?
That's revenue run rate, yeah.
Yeah, and the custom chip business has doubled to $20 billion run rate. that was the thing that I had read, and I meant to find it again. And I don't think it was Andy Jassy. I think it was the AWS CEO. He did a couple interviews this week, and I'll see if I can find them, and I'll put them in the show notes when I send that out. I'm paraphrasing again. I hope I'm not messing this up. I'm like sure he said something along the lines that we've had more requests for CPUs than we can fulfill. And we're saying no because we need those CPUs for our own infrastructure.
Yeah, I think that was for the Gravitons, right?
Yeah, Graviton processors. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's customers out there who would want to reserve the entire capacity of Graviton.
Am I remembering that from our last week conversation? Because as you said it that way, I was like, did we talk about that last week, or was it something I read?
Maybe, but they also have it's also Trainium capacity too. I'm seeing, right?
Like, yeah,
or Trainium 4, despite it being 18 months away from general availability.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, it's nuts. There's so much demand for this.
Yeah.
You got to wonder how much of it is just Anthropic, but there's a lot of demand for these Trainium chips.
Yeah. I guess you'll probably never know, right? But those numbers are pretty astronomical. And the other thing that that I read, somebody was like, okay, this is all great. But you'll also notice that their cash flow has dropped significantly as well. And the theory there is that they're investing so much money into capital to build everything, to build data centers and stuff like that, that, you know, they just don't have the cash anymore. Well, they have cash, but not like they were before. You know, I think it's like billions still sitting there, but it's not like, you know, the levels that they had before.
Yeah. I mean, well, when you're plowing $200 billion into data center build outs, then that'll happen to you, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing was that they're saying that right now they can't get the power that they need to build the data centers fast enough to keep up to demand.
Well, this is what we were seeing with the OpenAI data centers too, right? Like they backed out of a bunch of deals just because a lot of these haven't even broken ground because of the power constraint, right?
Yeah.
So there's just not enough electrical capacity
to
build out the way they need.
Crazy.
Which is insane to think about. But
it is, right? And then the last thing that I made a note of on here was that they are now also the number two grocer in the United States. $150 billion in gross sales.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm reading this new book and it's called Red Rising. And it's a really interesting book. It was recommended to me by somebody in one of the Discord channels I hang around in. And as I was reading this article, I was like, 'cause it's in the future. And you know, futuristic sci-fi, and essentially the human race is governed by corporations now. And I read stuff like this, and I'm like, okay, so let me see. They're probably the biggest bookseller in the world. Insert all other retail that they do. They got cloud, and now they're the number two grocer in the States as well. Talk about a single corporation with a lot of power.
No kidding. We're just rapidly careening towards a less cool version of cyberpunk, right? That's what it feels like.
Yeah. I'll save my Red Rising for the end and my recommendations, but you're right. It's less utopian and more dystopian feeling, because there's only going to be a few people with those 700-foot yachts. All right. So That's all I had for the AWS news. I know you shared a few things sort of just before we went live. Was there anything else in there? I'm scrolling through my notes AWS wise.
There was one announcement about multi-cloud on AWS.
Okay.
It was the GA announcement for AWS Interconnect multi-cloud.
Yeah. So yeah, I saw that and I was like, my brain was immediately Connect and I was like, oh, that's the phone
call center
phone
app,
system. And I was like, I just breezed by it. And then when you shared it again, I'm like, yeah, you should read. That's not Connect. It's Interconnect. So is this just a way to simplify the connections between different cloud providers? Is that essentially what it is?
Yep, pretty much. Yeah. So you get an endpoint for, you know, various public cloud providers, your Azure, your GCP. Probably very handy if you're doing offsite backups, if you have multi-cloud requirements for that kind of thing. So just an interesting note that I saw on the news. And you get a free connection, apparently. So that's exciting.
Yeah. The first one's free, right?
First one's free, yeah.
First one's free. Okay. Before we change gears to a long list of AI news, do you have any project updates you want to share this week?
Oh, project updates. So I am totally retooling my brain to environment scripts right now.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of in the middle of a restructure for essentially what I've done is I've got it set up. I was using Claude for this. I've got the Whisper model set up on my local machine.
Oh, nice.
I've got it connected with RockM. So I can pull down essentially... I've just been messing around with our podcast episodes to start.
Yeah. Need a source of audio, right? Down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's a convenient source. Cool. But just analyzing the content, that kind of thing. So
what kind of analysis does it do?
So it gets the transcript, right? Like
Yeah.
it parses the audio into the transcript, and I'm doing topic analysis. Like, what have we talked about? Is there anything I can backlink from the news source ingestion that I've pulled this week? Any follow-up topics like that?
You know what, man? I hate this stuff. Because I'm immediately like, ooh, I could just, it kind of goes back to the why are we duplicating work? But this is the way that you learn this stuff, right? And I'm like, oh, I could have a page that does topic analysis, right? And you could go and see the topics that are covered, and it's just like, a web page or something like that. That's, oh man, more sleep deprivation. That's cool. That's very cool.
You could like go through and tag every episode with whatever content is in it, that kind of thing, or things like
Yeah.
that. Yeah,
Yeah. Very
that's what I'm
cool.
messing around with. How about you? What have you been messing around with besides those demos?
Yeah, mostly the demos this week. To be honest, I haven't looked at the personal projects a little bit this week just because I've been a little bogged down with the demos that I have to get done. The one thing, the one hard lesson I learned from my disk cleanup is be very careful with Docker prune.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's funny, like I was so careful when it's like, oh, well, you could do this, you could do this, you got a lot of stuff on Docker. And I was like, Docker. Without thinking, all the MCP servers are all Docker containers. Now, luckily, it was so funny. When, like, I think I've told this story before, right? A long time ago, working in the warehouse, and I when I restored training data over production data, that was a fun day.
Oh yeah,
And
classic.
you don't notice that anything's wrong, right? And all of a sudden, your phone starts ringing or whatever, right? It's like you're in the ocean. You're like, what is that weird shadow? And you're like, that shadow's getting bigger. And then it's like a great white shark, right? You're like, I don't want to be here anymore. Same sort of thing happened. So I run my Docker prune command, and it's like, look, we saved all this space. And I go on my merry way. And then
Yeah.
I'm like,
Feeling
okay,
lighter.
I need you. Yeah, a little lighter. Yeah, I need you to update this card in the Kanban. And it's like, well, I don't have a Kanban MCP. What are you talking about? And all of a sudden, my brain was like, you dumbass.
Oh
I
no.
know exactly what happened. So the first thing I did was like, okay, well, yeah, that's just a fluke. It can't be what you think it is. So talk to the I call it the time machine, right? Record 15 minutes for XYZ. Oh, there is no MCP for time.
Where's the time machine?
It's gone, right? You transported it back in time and you weren't in it. So I was like, I had that little moment where I was like, oh, you gotta be shitting me. So what do? I go to Claude and I'm like, okay, I messed this up, right? Like, it's my fault. This is what I did. I ran this Docker prune command to clean stuff up. What do I do? And it was the best response. Don't panic. I'm like, thanks.
Classic. You
I
take
feel better
respect
now.
moment.
But you know what? It did a really good job. It's like, oh, I know what MCPs were missing. There's th this one, this one, this one. I got about four or five of them now that wire all my tools together, right? And it's like, oh yeah, that's no big deal. We've got all those in Git. Let me pull all the Git projects down because it has access to all my Git projects, right? So it's like, I'll just pull main off of them all, make sure we have all, if we've made any changes, I'll make sure they're local. And then it fucking ran Docker build commands for me. And I'm just like sitting there, sweating bullets a little bit. And then it's like, yeah, no problem. All those images are rebuilt. Stop and start your Docker gateway and let's try it. So I did that and I'm like, log some time, and it's like, yep, time logged. And I was like, whew. The other thing I noticed, we've talked a lot about this idea of open brain, second brain, whatever you want to call it, right? I really noticed how much I depend on that tool now. Right? Like, not so much, I'm not necessarily querying it all the time for stuff. But like, I'll start a project. I call it the Go skill now, right? And I open up a project and I type Go. And what it's doing is it's going to OpenBrain. The very first thing it does is go to OpenBrain and try to pull in relevant context for the status of that project, right? And like
templates or
yeah, like templates, yeah. where does stuff exist? Like it uses that to grab the Git info that it needs to go grab issues. It's all there. And yeah, the whole, like, talk about critical path. So
yeah.
I think I need to think about it a little more. I've got backups and stuff like that, you know, RDS backups and all that, but I'm thinking more along the lines of like, what happens, like if something catastrophic happens. So I've been outside of the demos, I've been thinking about that because mm-hmm. to be honest, without those MCP servers and without that open brain, man, I felt like I was in the dark ages again. I was like, oh man, how am I going to do the work. Like, I don't want to be overly dramatic. Yeah. Like I could write the code. It's just the way it's going to be, but you get used to having these tools to help you move faster. And I was like, oh, this is going to suck. Right. So
yeah, I mean, the speed up is real, right? And if it goes down or you run out of tokens, it's noticeable.
Yeah. So, it's noticeable. Yeah. Right. So that's that. I don't have anything cool about, like, you know, audio or anything like that this week. But I do have a little bit of another hard lesson, you know, wasn't that bad, but still could have been bad. So I think I need to think about how to protect all that info.
Yeah, a lot of good OPEX opportunities there, right? So like an ECR repos for those images.
That's exactly what I was thinking, right? Like, it's all in GitLab. Probably. It's all self-hosted. That GitLab instance, you know this, because that's the same instance we were working on.
Oh, yeah.
It's backed up, you know, all of that stuff. It writes to S3. It does all the stuff it's supposed to do. So, yeah, but I thought immediately the same thing is, like, ECR repos, they're pretty much free. So
pretty much
just to have another destination for those things in the pipeline, when you build it, push the image over there too, so that I've got it somewhere else. If I, you know, if something really bad happened.
Yeah. I mean, if the systems become essential to your workflow, right? Like, why not make it a fully, like, CI/CD backed up, however you can make it more resilient, right?
Yeah. And the other open brain related thing, and then we'll move on, is I've been trying my damnedest to record a video about what it is and how I built it, and damn, that is hard.
Well, so what's tripping you up on that? Is it just like breaking down the topics and
just breaking down the topics and actually like I've got my outline, but like to record something that doesn't, when you watch it back, just feel blah, right? Like, it's hard to watch yourself, right? You're like, oh God. So
yeah, it's pretty rough.
Yeah. It's very different than live coding on Twitch, where you just get what you get. When in this case, you're trying to, polished isn't the right word, but I'm trying to kind of articulate it down into something in a small chunk, and it's challenging. I'm going to take another run at it, I think, when we're done here. But yeah, that's the other thing I've been struggling with this week. I just can't get something that I'm like, yeah, that's kind of what I want. So anyways, not an AI
writer's
issue.
Curse.
Yeah. I've got my outlines and stuff, but I just can't make it, just doesn't, it's not, there's something with it that's not quite right yet. So I keep struggling with that one. So, all right. Project updates for the week. Let's change gears and talk about Gen AI news. The first one is Meta with Muse Spark and super intelligence. Why don't you walk us through this?
So Meta's kind of back in the game, in the conversation, which is really interesting. So they dropped a new model, Muse Spark, and it's competitive. Like, it ranks in the top 5, I think, on open analysis.
Yeah, 4 or 5,
artificial analysis,
right?
Rather.
Yeah.
Yeah, number 4 on intelligence on that list, like right between Claude Sonnet 4.6 and Claude Opus 4.6. So, okay. Here's Meta. They're back.
They're back.
I don't know where you can actually run it is the problem.
Well, I looked at this and it looks like for now it's available on Meta platforms like Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp.
Huh.
So actually, you know what? When you think about it, though, think about the user base that they have access to on those platforms.
For right? sure. Yeah.
They would have insane access to a user base that none of these other companies really have access to. Like, if you think about Claude or OpenAI, like the number of users that would be potential well, users of that system with little to no friction makes a lot of sense, right? That that's where you would want it first.
Totally. I mean, well, they have what, over a billion accounts on the platform. Some crazy number, real, right?
The other thing that thought of with that is when you're releasing it onto those platforms, it doesn't necessarily have to be perfect. Like it has to be good to do the things that your user base wants to do. But maybe it doesn't need to be maybe as good as some of those sort of state-of-the-art things that exist. That was the other thing that I kind of thought of when I was reading this, is it's a great test bed.
Well, totally. I mean, talk about a comeback, right? I mean, they don't need to, even the fact that they have a foundation model that is apparently this capable, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy. What I don't know about is like, what does Facebook's developer platform look like? Like, can you make a Facebook cloud account and run compute? Crazy. Yeah.
No clue. I can't remember I don't even have a Facebook account, and I'm not a Instagram person. I'm not a WhatsApp person. So like and the other thing I wrote down is it's available for your Ray-Ban glasses too, which I guess if you want to walk around recording everything,
sure.
Yeah, maybe I need a pair of Ray-Ban glasses to record my demos.
Yeah.
Because then I'm just looking at the screen anyways. It's just recorded, right? It's done.
And sit in front of a mirror or whatever.
Yeah. That wouldn't be weird. That actually reminded me of another little bit of personal project. I tried out OpenCode.
Oh, nice.
Yes. I think I shared with you that I used GLM. Is it GLM?
Okay. Yeah.
One of the models we talked about last week, 5.1. And it did a good job, man. The hardest part was trying to get it wired into OpenBrain. Again, because there's so much context in there, right? And I didn't want to have to explain the project to it. I was like, dude, you just need to go over here and read, man. It's all there. and it cost me like $1.50. And it went through the OpenBrain project, analyzed all the code. Once I wired it up into Git, which I'll have a funny little story for you in a second, that it went through and it created, I don't know, I put it in a blog, I put it in a post on LinkedIn. Let's say 15 to 20 issues that it discovered. Okay. And I just let it write them. I'm like, I'm not going to scrutinize these. I want to see what this does. And I would say half to three quarters of them were not necessarily like fix now type stuff, but things that should be there that need like to be fixed. They were valid, issues. Right? They were real issues. And then the other, like, whatever my math was, one quarter were just like, not fix, right? We're not going to do this. The funny part was you can really tell the difference that I'm going to call it the reasoning. Like, I'm like, okay, you need to connect to GitLab. I've created you a group token that you can use. And it's like, no, it doesn't work like that. You've already got a token there. If I can't use that token, and I'm like, no, you can use the new token. I swear you can use the no, it doesn't work like that. I have to use this other token. And I'm like, so there's like a bit of back and forth. And you know how I fixed it? Take a guess how I fixed it. I'll give you one guess.
MCP.
No,
you
tell
me to just do it.
No, I didn't. I went to Claude and I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's my situation. I'm talking to another agent. This is what they're saying. I'm trying to articulate to that agent that what they're saying is incorrect. They can use this other token. I don't have to create duplicate repos and all this crazy shit. And it's like, yeah, okay. And I'm like, okay, help me explain to this other thing in concise language how to make this work. And it did it on the first hit. I just literally went, it spit out something in Claude, and I just went,
copy paste,
put it over here. And I'm like, you should read this. And it's like, oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, you're right. That will work. And then once I got it going, like, boom, it just did its thing. And for $1.50, You know,
it's
kind of very similar to what we were talking about with doing, you know, those security agent scans and stuff. You know, just having an agent check another agent's work still isn't necessarily the only thing you want to do, but for $1.50,
it's not the worst. It's definitely a lot cheaper. I mean, if you were just to use Opus on inference credits, like peer credits without a subscription, that would have been like $10 to $20 to do that same task, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's pretty good for, I mean, for what it is, right? Which is an open
weight
model you can, or,
yeah.
I don't know if it's open weight actually.
I don't think it's open weight, but.
No.
So I signed up for Open Code and then I used.
Oh, no, it is.
Is it open? Yeah, is it open? I signed up for Open Code and then got that installed. That was easy. And then I signed up for, is it called Zen, I think, which is their.
Yeah.
I'll call That's it payment their platform or whatever.
Inference provider. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. It's essentially where I gave them my cash, right? So I put like $25 on my plan. And I had in my to-do list to try another model, maybe like Kimmy or something like that, and do the same thing. And I ran out of time. So I might try that this week just to compare it again and see.
Makes sense. Yeah, I think Kimmy K2.5 is free on there. In their usage. Okay.
Yeah.
So you can get, I mean, that's a decent model you can do some work with.
Yeah.
I've been using Minimax 2.7. That's my go-to at the moment.
Yeah.
Just because it's cheaper than GLM 5.1 and about as good.
Okay.
You really kind of, it's kind of funny though. You can feel the difference in like the amount of tokens you get out of the subscription plans versus the API setup, right? So it's kind of crazy how much they're subsidizing that.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Well, I think everybody is now, right? So just trying to get you on the platforms. Okay. So where do we want to go next? Oh, we shared an article about Anthropic managed agents, which I thought was pretty cool in the sense that you were able to separate your agents into like the brains, the hands, and the session information. I thought it was pretty interesting. It's public beta. Okay. And the blog post is worth read. Even if you're like, I'm never going to use this, just the architecture that they explain on how they break these pieces apart, like into the brains, I'll call it the hands or the tools, and then the durable stuff that persists between those sessions, pretty slick. And one of the things was it was able to essentially reduce the amount of time that it took to get first tokens back to you. And there was something about the cost too. And I'm quickly looking at my notes and I don't think I made a, what I wrote down here doesn't make sense as I'm looking at it now.
But I can imagine you would save if you're, you know, I'm sure you're using probably Haiku to manage the session, and orchestration is going to be a more intense model.
Yeah.
And then actual tool calls, you might want to use like Sonnet or something like that. Yeah. Right. So
Yeah. Right.
It's interesting to see how they break down the primitives in this kind of system. Right. You have like a more intelligent kind of directing system set up that's good, has various sub modules that it's using to generate the output you want. So.
Yeah, pretty Makes neat, sense. Right? And the pricing, the one thing I did write down here around the pricing, they gave an example of what it would cost to do something, and that's what I've messed up in my notes here, but it just uses standard API token rates too.
Oh, okay.
And with a little bit of an uplift on it, right? But not like basically on the amount of time you're using a managed agent, very similar to like what you would see for a service in AWS, you know, for the amount of hours you're running, it's X, you know, sense. So I think in addition to your tokens, then you pay for essentially, I'll just call it the platform. So you pay for that platform layer as well, and in addition to the tokens.
Oh, interesting. So they're charging for that platform layer too. Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't bad. I'm not going to give the rate here because I don't know if I messed my notes up, but it wasn't like, you know, $15 an hour or something like that. It was cheap still. So might be kind of neat to try it if you can get access to
the SDK.
You know, now that you say that,
wouldn't that be interesting?
Oh, I don't have the URL in front of me now. Hold on, where is it here?
Because if you have access, I mean, they're tightly partnered with Amazon now.
Yeah.
If you have access to that system. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they weren't, but it also wouldn't surprise me if they were, so.
Yeah, exactly, right? Let me see here. I'm just quickly searching for agent. Agent. I've read, you know what you're making me think of here is because I did read somewhere about the agent SDK, and I was like, when you said that, I was like, oh, is that where I read this? I'm not seeing anything pop out in the article. It must have been somewhere else, but it's worth a read because they go into sort of how it works, this idea of like the harness, right? And then they've got sandbox environments that you can use, the orchestration layer. Again, it's kind of like similar to what we were just talking about with Agent Core, this idea of sort of a managed service, for lack of a better word, a platform that you can now leverage rather than having to build it all yourself, which is what a lot of people are doing, right? Is building these sort of, is it a framework or a methodology that they're using to help these tools?
Yeah, just like a system/harness/thing you want to, whatever you want to call it, if you're rolling your own, that helps you get better output, right?
Yeah.
I like the abstraction of taking the tools out of the system, because I kind of like the idea of having sets of tools that you can swap in and out of for various tasks. I wonder if there's any benefit to that.
Yeah.
But I'd be interested to play around. Although it seems like after the leak, the actual tools they expose to the model are pretty basic. Like there's read file, edit file, search, and that's pretty much all you need to get going.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to think. That's nuts that the models were tuned to just use that.
Yeah. Now I can't help myself now. Ever since like last week or the week before, when you're like, "Oh, it's just basically a whole bunch of greps." Now I notice it. I'm like watching it do something, and I'm like, "Hey, there's a crazy grep. There's another crazy grep. There's a search with all sorts of, you know, I'll call it regex, but like pretty simple regex in it, right? It's looking for a specific pattern in something. I can't not see it now that you mentioned it. I'm like, oh, there it is again.
I'm sure they're enhancing, like they have special, like they're just wrapping some special search service or a tool rather that they've tweaked, like maybe a tweaked version of grep or rip grep or whatnot to get better results and just calling it grep. But
yeah, probably.
It's cool to see.
Yeah, probably. What was the other thing? I had another Anthropic, I can't remember if this is one that you shared with me or not, the automated alignment research. Turning compute into safety progress.
Yeah, this was very cool. Anthropic's posting a lot of really interesting blog posts this week.
Yeah.
But essentially what they did was they had a untuned, larger, more powerful model and a smaller, highly tuned teacher model. And they were using the teacher model to, you know, tune the larger untuned model on various tasks and things like that to get the output that they want is kind of the gist of this, or the gist rather. So yeah, interesting stuff. Apparently you can use like, so the main result was like after 5 days and $18,000 in compute, the automated researchers got a performance gap recovery score or PGR score of 0.97 versus a human baseline of 0.23. So that's the kind of difference you're looking at there.
Yeah, the number was huge, right? The difference
it's massive,
between them.
Yeah.
The thing that jumped out at me though was also the comment where they did notice where the automated researchers were essentially gaming the system to score better, and the humans were catching it and be like, you can't do that. Right? So kind of goes back to what we've said. A human in the loop is still important in this. Otherwise, you can't trust these
funny
things.
That this is alignment research, right? So you need to have very strong guardrails and a quality assurance process to make sure that you're actually getting the expected results. But it's like, I think one of the things was it was like, just pick A, it's more common, it's the one that happens the most, so it's more likely.
Isn't that amazing?
In the data set. Yeah.
I remember that strategy from like high school and multiple choice tests. You're like, if you don't know what it is, pick A. And I never much. Quite knew if that was, but I did it, right? I was like, I have no clue. A, just move on.
That's when you get those jerk teachers who give you like every answer on the test is C and whatnot.
Yeah. Good. And so then as you're doing it, you're kind of like, this has to be wrong, right? Like, why is it possibly. C every time? I don't know my shit anymore. Speaking of which, I'm writing two exams. I'm writing the AI practitioner exam.
Oh, nice.
Which I would still argue is not a practitioner level exam, but as soon as they start, you know, if you think about the foundations practitioner, right? Like, how do you spell AWS? They're like, right? And this one's like, you know, how do you evaluate overfit in a model? How do you like what is this? Like, I can't remember. Like, I was like, I haven't written the exam yet. I went through the sample and I'm like, I wouldn't call this a foundation exam.
No, this is like how they're breaking out the old specialty ML exam. They've broken it out into this practitioner exam. Yeah. And then there's the, I can't remember what it's called, the agentic systems one, like the...
There's a pro level one now too.
Yeah, the pro level AI developer one.
Yeah, and then there's the ML, which I think is now just an associate level exam, maybe.
Mm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that's one exam I'm prepping for. To be honest, nice. It's making me a little nervous just because like all the model evaluations and, you know, how do you know overfit or underfit and all this stuff. It's just, I remember reading all that for the machine learning exam, the specialty one.
Yeah.
And man, that stuff's hard to, at least my brain, hard to keep straight. And then I have to redo my Architect Pro. So
fun.
It's up for renewal. So Yeah. You just maybe think of it as we were talking about, you know, always answer A if you don't know. Just popped into my head. I was like, oh man, I got to do that. So yeah, not scheduled yet, but got to get it in the books.
Got to book it.
Yeah, got to book it. Work towards a date.
It's okay. Every question is only two answers, right? Like there's A and there's like the you can eliminate
pretty,
two.
Pretty
Although,
much.
Although. They have been doing those pick three questions more, I've noticed. Yeah,
and they even had some of those in the maybe I don't know if we're talking about the same thing, but in the sample exam, they had like these are your three options, right? Mm. And you can only pick one of each of these three in the answer set in the bottom. There's no duplications.
Yeah.
And then the next time you'd see like, hey, here are your three options. They're like, it could be duplicated. And then they gave you like three answers or three questions where you had to fill in the blank, right? With one of those three or whatever. So I've never run into those questions before. So I was kind of like, oh, yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah. Have fun. Okay. So there's another little fun story. So I'll let you know how that goes.
Awesome.
Yeah. Where do we want to go next? Oh, we have a Mythos. I don't know if I shared this one with you. I apologize if I didn't. Hmm. There was a UK security organization that did some evaluation on Mythos. Did I share that one with you?
No, but what did they find?
Well, they found it's very good at dealing with, which is kind of what we all thought, right? Or what the way it was pitched to everybody. Basically, they said it's very good at exploiting, I'm going to use that word, exploiting systems that are not as secure as they should be. That it was very good at completing what they called the 32-step network attack simulation end-to-end. And it was the first time, I got it in my notes here somewhere, expert level, no model has ever been able to touch the levels that Mythos was at on that network simulation end-to-end test. So they're like, it's, you know, leaps and bounds ahead of anything we've had up until this point. So it's very good against weak targets. It was able to exploit those pretty easily. And again, the other comment that they made in there was this tool is going to be used for good and evil. So
oh yeah,
you just have to keep that in mind, right?
One thing I've been seeing, I mean, it totally lines up with what everyone's been saying in the content I've been watching this week, but it's so good at chaining together different steps and, you know, little utilities to go and run and find and explore and then escalate privileges and find the cross script bugs, right?
Yeah.
Kind of makes you wonder though, like how many more of these are out there that we don't know about yet, you know?
Oh yeah.
There's no reason Anthropic had to be the first one.
Yeah, right. Like I'm sure these exist already. They've probably existed for a very long time and just they were state sponsored, so you didn't know about them because they didn't want you to know about them, right?
Yeah.
The one thing you just said about the multi-step thing in here, it was a 32-step multi-stage network attack simulation. It's called The Last One, and it was able to basically go through all of those steps. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Not every time, but more than we've ever seen before. Yeah.
This is like at peak, you know, they're throwing huge compute at this problem to go and solve it. And then, you know, it's at one out of every what X runs that succeeds, but
exactly.
Still.
Exactly. There was one more thing that I wanted to talk about. It was I'm going to screw this acronym up. I'm going to go meter. I'm not sure if that's how you say it. The Time Horizons article that you shared. This blew me away. You want to talk about this one?
Yeah, totally. So this is kind of follow up on what we were talking about last week about task time horizon, right? So like how long or how big of a task can you throw at a model and have it complete successfully and deliver the, you know, a valid result. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about JLM 5.1 kind of on that list. And if you look at the chart, it's almost like log scale, essentially. But in 2019, GPT-2 could do a 4-second task, essentially, right? At the bottom end. you go to like 2023, 3 years later, GPT-4 comes out. It can do a 6-minute task. Okay, that's not too bad. That's like, you know, count words or search the web once or something like that, right?
Yeah.
You get to 2025, which is where we have like O3, which was like a big jump, and Claude 3.7 Sonnet. So now suddenly we can do hour-long tasks like train a classifier, for example, right? And then you get to a year later, 2026, we have GPT 5.4, Opus 4.6, and then also GLM 5.1 is up here in this range. But you're at 10-hour tasks now. That's a year later, right? So that's such crazy growth, right?
Yeah.
In that capacity.
Yeah. I wrote down in here that somewhere in that report, they said that task completion, like the time horizon idea, like how long it can run for, they're now doubling every 4 months.
Yeah.
So what did you just say? What was the longest one? 10 hours?
10 hours. So
if you follow that and it works out, 4 months from now, we'll be able to, you'll have something that could run for 20 hours. Doubling every 4 months.
Like a day's worth.
Yeah.
Or not even a day's worth of work, right? But like tasks that would take like 3 days to do or whatever.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Crazy, right? You know what? Like I'm not getting anywhere close to those kinds of things, but it does shock me every once in a while. Like I'll have something running over in the other screen and it's working away on a task or whatever. And kind of something will just trigger I'm like, oh, you should check. And I'm like, it's still going. And like, it's just churning away as I'm answering emails or working on something else. Mm. And I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. We'll just keep doing your thing over there. It's pretty incredible when you think about it. What'd you say? Like 2-second tasks. And now like on your laptop at home, you can have tasks that are running for very long periods of time.
Yeah.
Oh, crazy. Yeah.
And it's in a bunch of domains too, right? Like it's not just coding specifically, like Live Codebench and Sweebench Verified are at the top of the line here.
Yeah.
But also the AIME test, the GPQA Diamond benchmark, that kind of thing. Like it's across the board.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Well, man, that's everything I had on my list. Do you have any recommendations to wrap up?
I have a anti-recommendation.
An anti-recommendation.
what do you call that? A warning?
A warning. Yes. What's your warning?
We watched Grisly Fate over the weekend.
Sorry, you broke up there a little bit. Grizzly what?
Grizzly Fate.
Grizzly Fate. Okay.
And that's a movie about a night where two bear attacks happened in a provincial, or a, not a provincial park, but a national park in the U.S.
Oh.
I think it was Yellowstone. We thought it was going to be a slasher, but it was actually more of a not a documentary, but like a retelling of events. I wouldn't recommend it.
would you not recommend it because it was bad, or would you not recommend it because it lives up to its title? Like, when I hear grizzly, I think like grizzly, not the bear.
I wouldn't recommend it because it didn't deliver on the grizzly part. It was it was more of a human, like a human story, which is fine.
Yeah,
it's not what we were expecting.
I do have a bear story that I could share. We were camping one time.
Oh,
and I'll give you the Cole's notes. We spent the night in the car because I had this like little tiny tent. It was when my wife and I were like. It was long time ago, had this tiny little one person tent that we used to camp in. Right. And it had like the long fly that goes out the front it's like the middle of the night. And we're in an area where there's not a lot of people around and I'm getting elbowed awake. Right. There's a bear and I'm like, there's no bear. Like, you're crazy. There's no bear. Just go back to sleep. It's just the wind. And I'm like lying there. And I'm like, no, there's a bear. There's like it's on the other side of this thin, tiny little piece of plastic, little fabric. Like, I'm lying in my sleeping bag and I'm like, oh, that dude's like right there. Right. And at one point in the fly of the tent, like get into the tent, you get your gear off and everything before you get into the dry tent. That thing was like, its nose was in the fly of the tent. And I'm like, oh man, this is like that. This is that the moment where you're just like, what do you do? So we just sat there and it sort of lost interest. And I'm like, okay. And of course I'm away from the door of the tent. Right. So I'm like crawling to get out of this tiny little tent and the two people are in and unzip and get out of the fly. And I'm kind of like got the flashlight and I'm like, let's go to the car. And it's like literally the middle of the night. And we waited for the ranger in the morning and it was so awesome because they're like, oh yeah, you're here. And the bears like to go from there to there and you're kind of in the middle. You might not want to stay there. And we're like, yeah, I think we'll move. Ooh, you can. One thing I found is you wake up very quickly. Like
I'm sure.
Yeah. It's a fair amount of adrenaline at that moment. It's just like, there's no bear. Yeah, there's a bear. We should do something. We never went back to that campground again. That was actually, in fairness, that was pretty much our last camping trip because I don't think I would have been able to convince Karen to ever camp ever again. Even if it was in our backyard, it's like, forget it. We're not doing that. Yeah, fun. Yeah, I have a recommendation, not an anti-recommendation. I mentioned it earlier on, Red Rising. I'm getting Matrix feels, like not computer sort of stuff like that, but just this idea of like breaking out of something. I'm getting Silo feels in the sense that there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. You're underground. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on that you don't know about. And you think you've been tasked with one thing and it's something completely different. I'm only about maybe a quarter of the way through the book. And it's a series of books. I want to say it's maybe four or five books. So far, if you're into like kind of sci-fi like space. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know what? I went into it totally blind. I didn't read the reviews, nothing. I just got a recommendation from somebody that I trust. She was like, you should read this book. And I was like, as we were talking, I went to Kindle and I was like, put that on my Kindle. So then when I called it a night, I fired it up and I was like, I'm reading. I kind of, for whatever reason, I made the assumption it was going to be like fantasy, you know, like knights and dragons and stuff like that. Cause these folks are big Valheim fans. So I kind of was preparing myself for, you know, Viking Minecraft and I was like, ooh, Mars. So then it really got me going. Really, really great book so far. So if you're looking for something to add to the reading list that is not work related, definitely worth a definitely worth a try.
Sweet. I've been looking for, I have three new fiction books to read. Coming from your recommendations now.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I keep adding.
There's the We Are Bob.
Oh yeah. We Are Legion. We Are Bob. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was another one that I can't remember now.
I don't know.
Something else you recommended.
Yeah.
Well,
you know what? One of the things I've found is I'm reading a lot less nonfiction.
Hmm.
I'm just like, dude, you got to have like, you got to do something other than just read about work all the time. So I've found myself a nice little set of sci-fi series that I'm working through. So it's kind of fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We made it. It's an hour and 10 minutes. No disconnects.
Okay. So has anything changed?
Well, what I did tonight was I turned off Wi-Fi and I still don't think that's the issue because I used to do those coding streams all the time and they were just on Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I did change, which I don't know, I have to test it. Maybe I'll do another live coding session. And if it breaks, it breaks. I went from my self-hosted DNS. I bypassed that and I put in, is it Cloudflare's the 1.1?
The 1.1. Yeah.
Yeah. And I put in just as a backup, I used Google's 8.8.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was a DNS issue or what, but we made it an hour and 11 minutes with no disconnects.
Hooray.
Yeah. So now I get to go to Claude and say it worked and I followed your checklist and we'll see what it says.
Hopefully they turn down the snark.
Yeah. No, told you so. That's what it's going to say. All right, man. Until next week. Yeah, that's the show.
All right.
We need an outro too, right? We don't know how to start the show. We kind of just look at each other and go, are we done? I don't know. We're finished, I guess. All right, man. I am going to roll the cool music.
That's it.
Yeah. Bye.